And welcome, everyone. This is Christopher, and this is the premiere episode of Orphaned Entertainment, this monthly podcast, hopefully monthly. We hope to explore some films, television, and radio that have, through time, been either orphaned, and some may say liberated, and have fallen into the realm of public domain. We will dive through the vast online collections of websites and such like archive.org and try to rediscover some of these near-forgotten pieces of entertainment history. I cannot do this alone, not well anyway, so I have invited a friend of mine to join us on this little adventure. I will introduce you to her now. May I introduce Lydia?
Hello, this is Lydia.
Welcome, Lydia. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Christopher.
Now, Lydia is a good friend that I get to see only once a year, unfortunately.
Tragically.
Tragic.
Yeah.
Whenever I head out to Denver Star Fest, what's 900 and something miles between friends?
Oh. Nothing more than just, quick plane ride.
That's happily. Right. Yes, being felt up by strangers, having your pictures taken in the airport.
That's you, yeah. Oh, I thought you meant at Starfest, but
oh,
yeah. In the airport, too, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, I'm really happy to be here. Here, still 900 miles apart, I guess, but getting a chance to talk to you again.
Yes, it's a lot of
unusual.
I think this will be a lot of fun, and I hope we both enjoy some of the films and such that we come across and get to talk about.
Hopefully.
Today, I thought we would start by doing a film that was truly orphaned, because I don't know if I am not a lawyer. I am certainly not a copyright lawyer. And so I actually even had to do a little research about what is, copyright law and how films fall in the public domain. Most films from 1964 on get a good 95 years, thanks to Congress, before they fall in the public domain. Some say that every time public domain is extended is about the time when Mickey Mouse comes close to falling off the the protected time frame.
Yep. And then it gets extended again.
And then it gets extended again. So right now, everything after 1964 is good pretty much automatically for 95 years. But here's the neat thing. Films prior to 1989, everything had to have a copyright notice included on it. And if it didn't have a valid notice, then it wasn't protected under copyright. So Congress gave everyone like 5 years to fix a problem. They wanted to go back to any of their films and add a copyright, it would be protected. Well, no one did that to this 1983 gem called Prisoners of the Lost Universe.
Woohoo. Well, yes. Well, because now we get to watch it and we get to tell you what we think about it. So
that's right. And the beauty of it is it's easy to watch because you can literally just go right online. The link is going to be on the show notes. It was actually on a post before this on the website. So you can go right to the website. You can watch it right there on the website. You can download it and watch it wherever you want. You know what? I actually have this on DVD.
Really?
It was in a big box set. That was one of those 100 sci-fi classics box sets.
Right. That you get for like $10 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I bought it at like Sam's for like $20. Yeah.
Oh man. That's a good deal. I mean, if you get three good movies out of that, you got a good price.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, one of those was indeed Prisoners of the Lost Universe. So I guess we should get into the film a little bit. Our stars are none other than Richard Hatch.
Famous, like Richard.
Yes. Richard is nice. Famous, of course, for Battlestar Galactica, both versions.
The version I like included, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The 70s version.
Yep. In between Battlestar Galactica and Prisoners of the Lost Universe, he did a few films, some TV movies, including a Charlie Chan film. I'm really curious to see that, because apparently he was Lee Chan Jr.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a couple of those, and I definitely remember the son.
Yeah, well, this was in 1981. I have no idea. It's called Charlie Chan and the Curse of the Dragon Queen. So that might be another one to go looking for.
Definitely.
Wonder if that had a copyright on it.
Right, no kidding. Well, there are a couple of Charlie Chan movies that are orphaned, I noticed.
Yes, much the older ones way back into the 30s and 40s and such.
Well, what I was really excited to see that he was in was Fantasy Island. I'm old enough to remember that. Yeah.
Yes, he did appear in Fantasy. Who didn't appear in Fantasy Island?
At that time, if you were in Hollywood, you were in Fantasy Island. They needed a bigger cast than I think was available at the time. They just got everybody. But he also did Dynasty. I was not a big soap opera fan, but he was in a few episodes of Dynasty too.
Yeah, so. I saw that. That actually surprised me. I did not watch Dynasty back in the day, but yeah.
But we all watched MacGyver. He was in that also.
Yes, he made lots of appearances all through the 80s.
Yeah. I'm just going to say yes to that. Yep.
The leading lady in this film is Kay Lenz. Now, she was someone that I saw her, and I thought, boy, she looks familiar. My first thought was she an angel? Was she one of Charlie's Angels?
Really?
Yeah, no.
Of course not.
No.
She probably would have lasted a little bit, well, made it a little bit bigger, but she was in The Tick.
Yes, she's American Made.
I was excited to see that.
Yeah, the animated series. She was the voice of American Made.
Short-lived, I thought that was great. Yeah, truly great.
But if you watch television through the 70s and 80s, or if you're fans of those films, if there was a show that you liked, she was in it at least once.
Mm-hmm. Was she the one that was in The Fall Guy? Yeah, she was in The Fall Guy. I was really excited when I saw that.
Fall Guy.
Yeah.
Black Cagney and Lacey, Magnum P.I., Hill Street Blues, Murder, She Wrote, et cetera, et cetera. Riptide, if you remember that one.
Mm-hmm. No. No.
Simon and Simon. She was in it four times.
That. I couldn't believe I hadn't even thought of Simon and Simon in, decades, but I loved that show.
Oh, yeah, I love Simon and Simon. They're not only brothers, they're best of friends.
Well, and, okay, from a girl's perspective, you got the blonde and the brunette. What more can you want? I mean, either way, you've got what you like on that one, so.
Even with the mustache on the...
Yeah, sorry, redheads, but yeah. All you red-haired guys out there. I think at different periods in time, I had a crush on each one of them.
I'm sure I probably had a crush on like one of their girlfriends or whoever.
Okay, I was a little worried for a second. I was going to say, surely he's not.
No, I probably had a crush on this girl when she appeared on all four times.
Probably she didn't look that familiar to me, but I
spent a lot of wasted time in front of the television.
I'm a little
watching
younger
these reruns.
Than you are too.
Yes,
not a lot younger, but a little bit. So I probably wouldn't remember quite as clearly as you do.
I wasted quite a few my summer afternoons sitting in front of the local TV station watching all the reruns, and yeah, she looked pretty familiar.
I don't know, wasted is a strong word for that. It sounds like a...
That's true. Look at all the knowledge I have now.
Now, okay, so John Saxon plays the villain in this one, and I got really excited when I read his name, and I thought, surely not. Then I realized I was getting it mixed up, John Sim and Harold Saxon. Not the same guy, not the master, but he's a little bit reminiscent of, the evil master in this, and also looks a considerable amount like Sean Connery when he was young.
Does, kind of. Now, as you mentioned, Sean Connery, kind of a little bit more of a dark-haired, give him a tan. Yeah.
Well, he had the beard thing, and Sean Connery had that going when he was a little bit younger also. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have the Sean Connery voice, of course, but he has an impressive persona on the screen, and he was in... just loads of stuff.
Just on IMDb, he shows 194 acting credits.
Incredible.
Yeah, again, very just prolific character actor, usually the villain or some sort of a head of security or some sort of authority figure or another. And he carries that really well. I don't think you'd ever see this guy as, okay, we want you to play the wimp. Yeah.
No, he definitely, he has a presence. He really does. He's kind of one of those bad guys that you think, if he wasn't intentionally a bad guy, I might actually go for him over the lead. He's got that, again, that kind of, I'm going to say it's sexy, that kind of sexy beard
swarthy
thing.
Swarthy European.
Yeah, that too. So, but I will say he was in the movie that first terrified me, the first movie that actually terrified me. And of course, I haven't seen it since I was like 12, of course, because it terrified me so badly. But he was in A Nightmare on Elm Street.
And, mm-hmm.
I saw that at a friend's house because we weren't allowed to watch scary movies, and scared the poo out of me. But he was not, happily, he was not Freddy. Freddy, was that his name?
Yep.
Yeah, he wasn't the bad guy in that one, but interesting to know that they're in the same, or that he was in both.
Yeah, well, he's a character actor that I've, again, because I grew up watching all these shows, recognized his name, recognized him immediately, and was really happy. He was like, oh, John Saxon. So, yeah, he's just one of those great guys you like to. He's a little bit like, maybe like Lance Henriksen or Michael Ironside. You know,
so you're gonna know more names than I know. So I'm gonna say, yeah.
Well, hopefully there's others out there. If anyone's listening, they know and they feel the same way. They're like, oh yeah, whatever. If he's in it, I'll watch it. What the heck? Yep.
Well, and what's interesting, even if you don't recognize his name right off, is that you've seen something he's been in.
Yes.
I'm just looking at the list from Dusk Till Dawn, which is something I saw recently, like within the last year. And, you know, it's a little campy, but I loved it. And I didn't realize he was in that. But yeah, again, yet another. If you've seen anything, you've probably seen him in something.
Yeah. And he's still acting. There's stuff coming up. In fact, one of the titles in post-production, Bring Me the Head of Lance Henriksen. So there you go. Oh.
Nice.
Well, should we get into the film?
Yeah, I'll let you take off with that.
All right, well, let's see. Prisoners of the Lost Universe. It opens up with, I can only describe as the end credits.
The credits have changed. They just have.
They have.
It's not just this movie, but, you know, back in the day, we opened with ending credits. And
they were less of fanfare, more of just a statement. Statement of fact, you know. This is the movie. This is who's in it. Thank you. Yeah. Very black screen, white letters, yeah. Flashing on the screen for you. They hold for a little while.
Nothing to distract you.
Mm-mm. Yep. No pictures, no moving, anything.
No.
Very simple.
And some extraordinarily, I don't even know how to describe the music.
Well, it was very early 80s.
It is. And it's, I feel like it's a cross between MacGyver and Kroll the Warrior King. it's kind of this strange mixture where you're excited to be hearing it and you think something amazing is happening, but you're looking at a black screen with white letters on it and you're kind of going, I don't know what this is going to turn into. So
yeah, and no real guitar strings or instruments were harmed in the making of this soundtrack.
That's true. Was there a harpsichord in there at one point?
There may have been.
Yeah, definitely early 80s.
Yes, but we are immediately introduced to our what do you call her?
Our heroine.
Oh, thank you.
I have one other quick thing before we get into that. Did you notice that a lot of the music was composed by Harry Robertson, who also wrote the screenplay?
No, I did not. So this was an all-in-one package deal,
It seemed to have been. It looks like Terry and Harry, that Terry Marcel and Harry Robertson, that wasn't a joke, were good buddies and decided to collaborate very closely. So yeah, it was all very in-house production. It opens right up with Carrie.
Yes,
it
opens with
Terry,
with
Harry,
Carrie.
And Harry.
Ooh, there you go. our heroine, as you described her, who apparently is the host of some sort of news program or reality TV show. I think it was, Weird and Wacky?
I think it was supposed to be like, a bit like Bill Nye the Science Guy. Like, you know, that kind of, this is interesting stuff about our world. But
I was thinking back, again, you're a little younger than I am, so you may not have ever seen, back in the early 80s, there were shows called That's Incredible and Real People.
I did not. Those were either too early in the day for me to watch or a little bit before my time.
Yeah. But that's kind of what it reminded me of. They would do, especially That's Incredible, they would usually, you know, find the guy that can catch arrows that someone shoots at him, mm-hmm. or, someone that can fold himself into a box. And so we see Carrie demonstrating that high-pitched noises can put snakes to sleep or something. And she snatches some cobra up in her hand while some really annoying flute is playing.
B-flat, I think. A high B-flat is what she said.
Oh, there you go. Exactly. In case anyone wonders, if you're ever stuck with a snake in front of you, just start humming really loudly.
A note on that. The dialogue in this film is not extremely strong.
No.
I think her introduction is a high B flat will put a snake to sleep, but only snakes that like music, something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it was meant to be kind of funny. Ha ha. You know, like, wow. Even in the early 80s, I think we would have come up with something better than that.
That is when Star Wars was coming out.
That's true.
Not to put too fine a point on it. But.
Yeah. Well, she's off to do a on-location interview with some sort of scientist who claims he's got some incredible discovery that he wants to show her. I don't think he's revealed what it is, but yeah. he wants her to come out along with the film crew, who is, of course, conveniently late.
Late. And she says, she actually calls him a mad scientist in the film, which I thought was...
I love the phone exposition.
Yeah.
Classic phone exposition.
A little bit too fast on the dialogue there.
Yes. It's that beautiful, hello, what do you mean they're going to be late? So what am I supposed to do with the mad scientist? Yeah. Okay, I guess I'll drive out.
I'm going to go ahead and say this now. If you watch it a second time, it doesn't sound quite as awkward, but that's only if you watch it a second time.
I think next time I talk to someone on the phone, I'm going to repeat everything they just tell me.
Interrupt everything they say, like when they're halfway through the sentence. What do you mean you're going to? Yeah.
And then just repeat whatever they said. Mm-hmm. So anyway, can you meet me? You want me to meet you?
Where do you want to go? To the park?
The park?
Yeah, the dialogue is a little brusque for believability's sake, but definitely keeps it moving along.
Yes, it tells the story. That's what they're there for.
Unlike the next scene, which is her driving to the mad scientist's house.
Yes, and listening to the radio, I believe at this point we get the little radio announcement that mentions that there's some earth tremors going on in California, which is where they're supposedly located.
And a jingle. We got a full jingle. We listened to the entire jingle, and I kept hoping that Mama Roland's jerky steaks were going to come back. I kept hoping that at some point somebody would take a bite out of something and say, tastes just like Mama Roland's jerky steaks.
Cause she could have stopped on her way since the camera crew was late.
I know, and at this random jingle. But, yeah. Back to the earthquake.
Yes, so they're driving along. There is an earth tremor, which causes her to go off the road. I wasn't sure if it's the earth tremor or the fact that she's driving a right-hand drive car.
Was she? I thought she was in a left-hand.
Nope, right-hand.
No, you're right. Now that I think back on it, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, in fact, you only see two cars, but all the cars you see are right-hand drive.
Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, so does that mean that the film is flipped, or does it mean they're actually driving right-hand drive?
Nope. They were filmed in South Africa.
Oh, you're kidding.
I don't know why.
I don't know how you knew that.
The internet is a wonderful thing.
I know. I probably could have looked that up, too, along with the fact that Bill Flynn is in this film, which I have to admit I was a little amused with. But
yes, we do have a mutual friend, Billy Flynn. And I saw that, too. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
I had to look him up. Yeah. Turns out it's not the same guy.
No, not the same guy. Although I think we should probably find a good poster and then work his photo into it.
That is an excellent idea. I will get right on that one. We'll send it to him for his birthday. No, but South Africa, I had no idea.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure why, because obviously they wanted it to look like California, because that's where this was supposedly set.
They did a good job, I was convinced.
Yeah, well, especially with the quote-unquote tremors.
Yeah, the tremors are extremely convincing.
I've
been in an earthquake, and that's exactly what it looks like. That's it. You feel just like that. Yeah.
Yes. But she, a tremor causes her to swerve off the road and have a little accident with our hero, Dan, played by Richard Hatch, who is apparently some sort of an electrician or a construction worker of some kind.
Kendo warrior as well, apparently.
Yes, and he carries his kendo stick in the back of his truck.
That I found to be the most difficult to believe part of this entire movie. The kendo stick that cost him $40, and he's carrying it in the back of it. I mean, that, you know, $40 was a lot in 83.
Yeah, and especially that kendo stick that carried him through the something nationals and...
defended a championship. And,
yeah. And he's just, it's just rolling around in the back of a pickup truck.
But it is a man, not a woman, so maybe that adds to the believability in it.
Yeah, could be. Maybe he practices on his lunch break.
That's true.
Protection, who knows? We don't know where he does his construction. Could be in the ghetto.
He has to defend his tools, probably.
Exactly. Because that cost a lot of money, as we find out later.
Later on, yeah. A lot of what he has costs a lot of money, but somehow kind of gets taken away as the film progresses.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like there may have been other ways to get across the fact that the guy has some sort of fighting skills.
Well,
It was a very convenient way, but it seems like there may have been a less obvious way.
Well, you know what's okay, so you as a guy would say that, but I as a girl, I was like, oh, how interesting, he does kendo. I have a friend that does
maybe
kendo.
That's why he carries the kendo stick.
He just does it to impress the girls.
Yep.
And we all go, ooh, is that a sword in your pocket?
It's a kendo stick.
Oh, yeah, no, but no, I honestly, it didn't even occur to me that he would actually be possibly having to defend himself in this film at that point.
All right. Maybe because I've actually had watched this once before, unbeknownst, not realizing that I had, until I started looking at some of it after I downloaded it. I went, wait a minute. And I still, so I flipped. That's when I flipped through my DVDs and went, I thought I watched this before.
Brilliant. But you, at that point, kendo stick and gets broken, and there's a little bit of witty banter. I have to admit, I wasn't disappointed in the way they interacted. She said very carefully. But no, I thought I wouldn't exactly use the word chemistry, but you're not watching these two people interact and thinking, oh, they hate each other, but they're faking it.
Right.
So I felt like it was probably a fairly good match, even just from that opening scene with the two of them.
Yeah, they actually, I mean, surprisingly for a film like this, the casting, how everyone interacted with each other, not too bad.
No, not especially not given the era, you know, when there wasn't quite as much emphasis on dramatic. Well, let me rephrase that, especially considering the genre. Where there wasn't quite as much emphasis on dramatic acting.
Exactly. It's amazing they weren't kissing before they drove off.
I was a little surprised.
Yeah.
I won't say disappointed, but surprised.
Or at least got their numbers or something. Yes.
Well, I think, you know, they were hoping for a little bit of tension there. But I was actually pleased with their first interaction.
Yes, because he was pretty much told her to just get out before he hit her. So she makes a beeline for a car, leaves, heads to her appointment with the mad scientist. Who I guess we should call, you know, Dr. Hartman instead of Mad Scientist.
Yeah, well.
Played by another character actor, not as well known, Kenneth Hendel. Don't really recognize him. Maybe he's been in a few things.
He's been in The Dirtiest Girl I Ever Met. Now that is actually the title of a film from 1962.
I hope he's not the title character.
I know he actually plays the part of the pimp. And that is how he's actually credited in the film is pimp.
Wow, so, I really can't see that.
I think at this point we've made this a non-family-oriented podcast. But
kids, ask your mom. Yeah,
it's right. Just it means a person that likes to take money from other people.
That's right. There you go.
Yeah, not a lot of things I recognized. In fact, I think I could fairly say nothing I recognize, but he has been in a few things.
Not as many as the others. Only 18.
Definitely 18. Not. Well, you notice that he kind of quit in general in 1989 and then didn't do anything until 2001. And then that was just a documentary. So he either stepped out of the limelight or, you know, moved on to something else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for all we know, this could have been, you know, somebody's lawyer friend. And, hey, you want to be in a film? Sure, whatever. You know, and then he just got a few parts, did it as a hobby. He could be a dentist. We don't know. Maybe he really is doctor, you know.
Well, and one thing that I did notice is that almost everything he's in is British. Almost everything that he made was actually made in England. So even
so he could have been. I tell you, he could have been much more of a stage actor too. Then
I honestly think that's probably the case because he wasn't an American actor, and especially I mean even now you don't see a whole lot of English actors. I mean now because England is doing so much more than they did before. I think you see people that are in, you know, just prolifically in TV series. And if you've seen them in one TV series, you see them in another in the UK. But I think at that time, pretty much, I don't think that it was as prolific as it is now. Now you get a British actor that, I mean, again, it's kind of the same thing where it's almost like back in the 80s where if you were in one TV show, you were in every TV show over in America. You know, right. In the UK right now, if you're in one British show, you're in every British show, but I don't think it was like that back then. I think they did a lot less production, so it's probably part of the reason you don't see him in as much stuff as you see the other people that were around in this era.
Yeah, and probably the only reason he was there at all and not an American actor is because they were filming there in South Africa,
and they
a little
wanted
closer, you know. So
yeah, they wanted an English mad scientist.
Exactly, he's got to have an accent. It provides credibility.
It's the best version. Yeah, absolutely.
So Carrie makes it to his house and discovers that this man claims to have built an interdimensional transporter. Or just two round, you know, big round things sitting on the floor with lots of blinking lights.
I want that in my living room.
It's a nice piece. It's right off of his. It's right off his hall. It's like, it's just a house.
It is. It's an awesome, by the way. Love the architecture. Mm-hmm. Really good 60s, 70s house. But that platform would be better than a dancing cage at a party, I think. Way better. Just so much more. It's a little classier, I think, is the right word for it.
Absolutely. He shows a little demonstration for Carrie by sending a few trinkets through this transporter, including her compact, I suppose it was.
Her mirror is really what it is. Back in the day, women didn't have mirrors and makeup in the same compact. But yeah, it was her mirror.
Okay. So he sends that through and sends it back. And for some reason, they can actually get a glimpse of the other world through her mirror. So Alice through the looking glass kind of thing, if you want to put a reference to it.
Yeah. Well, okay, now the part that perplexed me a little bit about this. Well, actually, you know what? Let's move on with the plot, and then I'll mention the part that perplexed me.
Okay, well, I was just going to say that another tremor about that time causes Dr. Hartman to fall into the beam of his transporter. Again, you're talking about the tremors. Rather unbelievable. They could have taken a clue or two from the old Star Trek crew as far as how to act like you're being shaken around.
Everybody go right.
Yeah, it was a fairly unbelievable fall. It's kind of like, oh, wiggle, wiggle. Ah, I fell.
Well, and then the funny part is as soon as they hit this beam, they freeze. So whatever else is going on, it completely puts them in a state of stasis. And but that was what perplexed me, too, is he's looking into the mirror, looking at this alternate universe, and there's no refraction from it. Maybe I'm thinking too hard about this, but I, for some reason, I expected there to, I actually, the second time I watched it, I was looking at it going, okay, no, wait, did he actually get zapped through because of the mirror? I was a little bit disappointed that he didn't.
Nope. Just apparently he left it on. You should never leave your interdimensional portal on.
Yeah.
Always power down.
Power down. And especially once you get the items back, I mean, you don't want to risk losing them again by accidental activation.
Exactly. Well, about this time, Dan shows up. His truck is broken down. He has come up. He's looking for help, someone to call a tow truck. And isn't it kind of fun back in the days before cell phones?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I didn't even think of that. I just thought, but my phone died today, so, you know, what do I say? I mean, it ran out of juice, so yes, I had to plug it in.
You could have been Dan, right?
I could have been Dan. I could have gone to a mad scientist's house today if only I'd, you know, had a car wreck or ran out of gas or something. But no, he comes knocking along, leans on the door, and falls right in.
Yep, and finds, to his dismay, Carrie. You again.
Who obliges him by hitting him again.
Yes, he's, of course, creeping through the house looking for someone. She's freaked out, and so she smacks him on the head with something.
Her bag. Yeah, it was her bag.
Was it her bag? Okay.
Yeah. I got to say, again, unrealistic point. Women have valuable things in their bags. They're not going to go hitting guys with them.
I would have think she would have found something in that lab that she could have smacked him with. Yes.
A control, you know, lever, something. Yeah.
A vase.
Chair.
A chair.
But, you know, it was enough to stun him. And at that point, he wants to know what she's doing there. Oh, well, yeah. Onu, not you again.
Yes. She tries to explain to him what happened to Dr. Hartman. He, of course, doesn't believe her. He's standing right over the device, thinks it's just a big joke, until another tremor. And I thought Dr. Hartman's fall was the most unconvincing fall.
Again, I think it's, you have to blame the stasis, that, you know, whenever they fall into the beam, automatically they're just frozen as they are.
Yes. Well, anyway, Dan falls through to the other world, or wherever this thing goes.
Followed immediately by Carrie.
Yes. No, not you too. She runs for him and immediately freezes and goes through. Let's see. She appears. No one's around. She's in this in the middle of a forest. Well, not really a forest, just a
on the top of a cliff, actually.
Yeah, top of a cliff. No one around as far as she can see. No Dan, no Dr. Hartman. Hartman. Yeah, I said Hartman. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, you said Hartman.
Okay.
Immediately, her ability to keep herself collected in a moment of sheer crisis really impressed me. Immediately, she begins to climb down the cliff.
Yes. She's got to go off in search of someone. Where did they go? They must be nearby. Still, you would have thought the proper thing to do would probably be stand there a while and call for them, because since you don't know what direction they went, and thinking, oh, climbing down the cliff must be the first place to go.
Or even scream in horror. I expected a little bit more reaction than just, oh, great. Here's the
cliff. This again.
Yeah. Now we know. Here's what it is. This is a sequel. We just didn't see the original one.
Yeah.
Everything always happens to Carrie.
During her wandering, she comes across a very big man in a very big hole, sort of quicksand.
Who just I'm going to assume doesn't actually speak English.
No, just sort of grunts.
Makes some weird
Chewbacca-like noises.
But interestingly, the actor as well has been in, I think this might have been the only English movie he was in.
Really? Okay.
He was in a number of others, but none of them anything I can pronounce.
Well, there you go.
Except for Gore. He was in Gore and Gore 2, G-O-R. So he, you know, startles her, but he's stuck in, what is it, muck? It's not really quicksand because he's not sinking.
Yeah, muck. Yeah, some sort of mud, muck, something. Well, she gets a stick to him so he can pull himself out, and he does. He grunts and walks away.
He grunts well. I actually thought it was actually an animal when I was first watching it.
Well, I think it was overlaid. His noises were definitely overlaid with something. I don't think that was really him.
Swedish, maybe?
Welsh?
He is a Vanderbilt, so. But yeah, so Carrie, being the good-hearted girl that she is, even though she has a tendency to beat up Dan accidentally, helps him out, gives him a stick. Well, not just a stick, a branch to help him climb out.
Yep. So, yeah, like I said, he grunts and then just wanders off. Soon thereafter, Carrie is reunited with Dan. Just in time to be attacked by glowing-eyed bird men that growl like cats.
Like jaguars.
Yes. That was interesting. And again, and you will in this movie, we'll say it probably many times, it's just men in body paint or suits. There's not much imagination in the creature creations in this one.
This is true. Well, and they had the same special effects as... Raiders of the Lost Ark, same guy working on those, interestingly,
really?
In case you didn't notice that one. But yeah, if you take into effect, not Raiders of the Lost Ark, Raiders of the Lost Ark, but you take into account the fact that back then kind of, we didn't have the CG that we have now. So,
no.
I mean, any impressive body paint or, you know, fake armor, anything like that was actually impressive back then. It's kind of like, you know, in Star Wars, you see... hate to keep going back to that, but you see, you know, creatures that are very obviously people in suits, but the fact that the makeup is done well is impressive. And in this case, you know, I think they actually had a greater variety of creatures than I would have expected at this, you know, in this scale of a movie.
Yeah, the budget, I think, was probably spread wider. If they had fewer of the creatures, maybe you would have, you know, like one or two really impressive ones. As it is, though, they were able to do, you know, dozens of...
You felt like a lot
actors,
was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the first 5-10 minutes of the movie are a little bit slow, but once you actually get to that Lost universe, it keeps moving very quickly.
Yeah. Our duo is almost falls off a cliff thanks to Dan's quick reaction. He grabs onto a root and stops them from falling down a kind of hard to tell with the perspective that they were showing exactly how far the drop was.
I would say, you know, at least 100 feet.
Oh, yes. It was kind of this weird. It was kind of like, okay, take a shot of something and then do another shot on top of that. And it's kind of like, is that straight down or is that sideways? Or?
But yeah, Fearless Leader saves the day with a root that then starts pulling out.
Yeah, so all looks lost. The bird jaguar people are going to roll a giant stone down on top of them.
Again, a little bit of witty banter in this little section.
Yes, yeah. I did not put enough notes about their banter between the two of them. They actually, they are kind of fun together.
They really, even though it's, I got to admit, pretty bad dialogue, again, I enjoyed their interaction. Even though the dialogue itself is not fantastic, I felt like they had a little bit of spark going.
Yeah, it is kind of one of these things that they really can't stand. They literally can't stand each other, but they find each other attractive. It's kind of a love-hate thing. Already,
I'm not going to comment on that. None of us have ever experienced that, ever.
No, that's okay.
Totally.
Yeah, I'm talking out my, yeah, you know.
You're, yeah. all of a sudden, one of the Jaguar men, I think of them as Jaguar men because the noise they make, they goes flying by over the cliff.
Yeah, gets thrown off. Apparently, the giant that Carrie saved has been kind of tagging along somewhere.
The man comes, beast, as he's billed. The
man beast.
I like
he
that.
He comes to her rescue, man beast.
With and the unibrow.
Yes, saves her, throws the Jaguar people off the cliff. And here's where this movie kind of begins to be kind of a movie of extremes. This was a made-for-cable movie. The language is not necessarily family-friendly, yet the sound effects are a little bit Hanna-Barbera-ish.
Yeah, up until this point, I had been taking it as a serious film.
Yeah.
I mean, even with the bad, the matter transport effects and all of that, I thought, oh, well, it's just, you know, early 80s bad effects kind of thing. But and then all of a sudden, we get a sound effect that kind of all of a sudden makes it comical.
Yes, the first creature gets thrown over with a whoop. You're like, what the hell was that?
Yeah. Yeah. And then thanks to the man beast, we get two more of that same sound effect, which, again, surprised me.
Yes, and I believe, doesn't he throw a rope down to him?
No. Dan has his trusty wire.
The wire he had on his belt, which he fashions a grappling hook with.
Apparently he had a grappling hook with him. Just handy. Well, you had a little hook anyway.
Yeah. He uses it to hang up his kendo stick.
Yeah.
So he tosses it up. First toss doesn't catch. Second toss, man beast takes it, hooks it onto a stump for him so they can climb up. And he, of course, gallantly lets Carrie go first.
A gentleman always does, and we get the classic line. Just that classic line, I can do this myself. Will you please, what does she say, remove your hand from my butt? the most quoted line in the movie. I just quoted it. There it is. Please. But again, here I enjoyed their interaction, not because of the hand on the butt specifically, but also because I felt like they really, the director tried hard, I think, to make a point that yes, these are two people that are attracted to each other, and while Anne is watching her climb up the wire, trying in a skirt. Yeah, trying very hard not to watch her climb up the wire, but, you know, unable to help himself. Again, you get the impression that these are people that really are attracted to each other, even if it is the early 80s and they can't express it freely like they can nowadays.
I was actually really impressed that they didn't play up the fact that she was in the skirt climbing up. You see Dan look a couple times and kind of glance up, but he didn't do the kind of like, whoof, and shake his head or anything.
You do not get a panty shot.
No. You don't get anything. They don't really play that up.
And through this whole film, yeah, I keep calling it a film. I should call it a movie. Through the whole movie, even though you have that sexual interest, you don't have any really risque scenes, which I thought was a little surprising for the early 80s.
Yeah. The closest, well, we'll get to one in a little bit that you, I don't know, borderline. I don't know if you call it risque. Yeah. But the two of them climb up and meet the green man, who I've affectionately just named Tonto.
Oh, he looks like Tonto. Well, no. He looks a little bit like a mix between like Tarzan and Tonto.
You know, Tarzan actually would be good if Tarzan wore a full body leather instead of a.
He has that like that. He's too handsome. Like he doesn't work as like, I don't know, in leading man, you kind of need somebody that's a little bit edgy, and you can kind of see maybe why he wasn't the lead in this part, because he's just too handsome. He's not believable. That's why they had to paint him green.
Yeah, painted completely green, but wearing the full body leathers, very much like that's why I called him Tonto. You know, it's even got the little frill on the sleeves and everything, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But much like, you know, Tarzan and Tonto, knows a little bit about everything, knows everything about the world, knows about the creatures,
and
knows
can
about
speak
the food. And no, he speaks Vanyan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Speaks Vanyan, which interestingly enough is pronounced and spelled and sounds exactly like English.
Yes.
It's one of those flukes of the universe.
Yes. Let's see. The Green Man helps him find, The Green Man was apparently captured by the Jaguar people for some reason. They untie him and let him loose. And so he feels, oh, okay, I'm in your debt, up to the point where they get attacked by a water beast while Carrie is apparently skinny dipping in
it's
a lake.
It's just Carrie. She's bathing. Why aren't men going to ever understand this? A woman sees water, she has to get naked and get in immediately. It's what we do.
All right, I'll keep that in mind.
No, but Carrie, excited
note
about...
Note to self, when podcast over, dig pond. Okay.
But... she's been dragging herself around for a day, which interestingly, I don't know if we find out at this point or earlier in the film movie, but apparently Dan has been there for a whole week and Carrie's only been there for a day.
Yeah,
so,
we find that out pretty much in the next sequence.
Oh, I'm sorry, you already had that covered, but I don't have notes to your detail. But yeah, she's taking a bath because that's what women do when they see open water.
Yes, but another man in body paint and latex tries to attack her.
Yeah, I thought it was Swamp Thing for a minute.
Yeah. Fortunately, Green Man is there with his trusty sort of rifle that uses some sort of some air berry to launch a projectile and destroys the water beast.
And the first real action scene that you see, too, I think, mm-hmm. I don't think running away counts really as an action scene.
Yeah. And again, this is one of those moments where you would think this is where the nudity would come in. You'd think you'd see a flash of something, but they do it actually pretty well. They keep it classy.
They keep it very classy. Carrie's hiding behind a bush and basically tells Dan, go away, I'm going to put some clothes on.
Yeah.
Very risque. You can see her shoulder. At two points in the scene, actually, you can see her shoulder.
And a nice shoulder it is.
It is a very nice shoulder.
Yeah, as they're wandering through the wastelands of the Lost Universe.
Oh, at this point, they lose the Green Man.
Yeah, Green Man goes off. His debt is paid. So off he goes.
He saved Carrie and boom, he's gone.
Yep.
But he does give them, what is it, a fruit berry?
Some sort of berry that doesn't look terribly appetizing, but supposedly will help them feed them on their journey.
But at least now we know how they survive over the next period of time. They know what to eat.
Exactly. But as I was saying, they find out that Dan has apparently been there for a week and yet looks fantastic.
He does. And apparently, even though he needs a shave, you really can't see the 5 o'clock shadow.
No, not at all.
I actually kind of want to take a second here. One thing that I did notice, okay, this movie was made in 1983. There's mm-hmm. not a very high budget. It's very obvious, but you can tell they really went to, and I'm not being sarcastic here, they really went to some effort to give some kind of alien plant life to the feel of it. They have almost in every scene, especially if it's a distant shot, they have some kind of alien plant life that you can tell very clearly is not, you know, an earth plant feature. And I was kind of impressed by that they took the time to, I think that actually made this feel more like a movie and not like a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, well, I meant to kind of describe this movie earlier, and I think I sort of mentioned it earlier. It's a movie of extremes, because they do go to that kind of effort mm-hmm. with some things, and then like we were saying that, although I'm sure the budget for the makeup and effects was small, it was spread well,
mm-hmm.
and then they had the ridiculous cartoon sound effects.
Right, but we do get, at least we get this idea that yes, there's food there that they can eat. Yes, there are other plant lives. We're trying to at least make it feel like it's not just somebody wandering around somewhere on Earth pretending that it's another planet.
Exactly. But so apparently, yes, seconds in our world are hours or days on Vanya. So the professor, since he went through minutes earlier, he could have been on Vanya for a year or more.
A year or more.
So that's why they're having so much trouble finding the guy.
And they, Carrie literally went through. She says, oh, just seconds after you. And yeah, it's literally like 2 or 3 seconds afterward. I think she has time to yell, oh, not you too. And then boom, she's gone.
Yeah, and that's that's a week. They discover this. They realize that they could be stuck here. They don't know if they're going to be able to find Dr. Hartman at all. This is a good time to kiss.
No. There's something important that happens before they kiss.
Okay, what's that?
The sparkly tree.
Oh, right. She sees the tree.
Says, I've seen that tree before. I saw it when Dr. Hartman fell through, and I could see it in my compact. At which point, apparently, yes, then it is time to celebrate.
Yes, they do. It's that really great where they kiss and the camera pans away.
To the sparkling tree.
To the sparkling tree.
Tree sparkles. If there were a train, it would go into a tunnel, but there's no train on by.
Yes, the flowers bloom, the tree sparkles.
Water runs down over a cliff. I don't know.
Yeah. Guy throws a football through a tire swing.
But again, kept very classy. So, yes, you definitely get the impression that, once again, Dan and Carrie very attracted to one another.
Yes.
So attracted to one another that any reason to celebrate is a good enough reason. And there you have it.
Well, the next morning, I guess, after their kiss.
I did not see a sunset in that scene, but we'll just keep going.
Yeah, well, someone was sleeping, I'm pretty sure.
Carrie is asleep, that's true. So, yes. So Carrie falls asleep and Dan goes to have a shave. But she starts off saying, you need a shave. And he says, I'm sorry. And she says, I'm not complaining. I think verbatim. So Dan goes off like a good man.
Yeah, good to shave to with his good old pocket knife there. Yeah,
get himself a shave.
We are finally introduced to our big villain. John Saxon appears as Cleol.
Dun,
nice.
Dun, dun.
Nice good name there.
Really good name. I thought they were saying Cleo at first, like, the cat from Pinocchio.
Yep, nope. Cleol.
Cleol.
K-L-E-E-L. He takes a shine to Carrie and...
And her hair the color of the sun.
Yes, apparently the women of Vanya are...
All brunettes.
All brunettes.
Or maybe redheads, we don't know. It's not clarified.
Yes, they don't go into that. Or maybe have green skin or, whatever.
Yeah,
and then apparently kills Dan with a gun.
Yeah, shoots him. Just boom. Dan says, get your hands off her. I think he says, I'll break your neck. And boom.
Yes, he does. I love he does the arms up in the air and jump to the side. Uh-huh.
Why don't they do that anymore? When I
know.
When I die, I hope somebody shoots me and I get the chance to jump up in the air. That's my goal.
If I ever make a movie, everyone that dies is going to do that.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I would definitely be up. Yes, please. And darn it, I had better be the evil woman so that I can be shot and throw my arms up in the air. But yeah, it's a dramatic death, man. And of course, Carrie is heartbroken.
Yes, absolutely. Well, they've just shared their little moment. But Cleol takes Carrie with her and heads off to his fortress or whatever. But Dan, fortunately, is not dead. He wakes up. Apparently, it just grazed him or something. I don't remember actually seeing. Did they bother with a wound?
I think there was a minor head wound, like a scratch.
A little graze. It just grazed him.
But when he wakes up, he's being pawed by another man.
Oh, that's right. He's being, Malachi. Shows up and starts to pickpocket poor Dan. Goes for his watch, maybe something along those lines. And
that's right.
Yeah. So Dan, of course, wakes up, catches the guy in the act, threatens does the usual man thing, threatens
and
to kill him.
Bribes
sort of
him, I think. Yeah. At some point, he says, "I'll give you my watch," which does all this magical stuff. Which, of course, it doesn't do. It's a watch.
Yes, because apparently Malachi knows how to find Carrie, and so Dan. Talks him into helping for the price of his watch, which, play tunes.
Again, a little sound, strange sound effect moment where you're watching this movie and you think this is a serious movie, and then they do a little sound effect and you think, no, this is a comedy.
It's the watch alarm, and apparently it'll tell the time in Tokyo.
And
very important on Vanya.
Where Tokyo doesn't exist.
Exactly. So let's see, we get a little, shot of Cleol and his horde, I guess, if they're resting for the night. It's kind of hard to tell what's day, what's night. They do a lot of night for day shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's a little hard to tell exactly what time of day we are in.
I think pretty much if it's not bright sunlight, you're expected to believe it's evening.
Yes. poor Carrie is almost raped and killed by a guard. That's actually kind of this probably one of the darker moments of the movie.
One of the darker two moments of the movie.
Yes. Fortunately, actually Big Man shows back up.
Yeah, that's right. The Man Beast does.
Man Beast shows back up.
But only briefly.
Just briefly. He's able to throw the guard off of Carrie. Cleal shows up, fires almost point blank into Man Beast's chest, and Man Beast and runs away. Cleal does not take kindly to this guard trying to have his way with Carrie, with the blonde haired lady.
Yeah. His new passion.
Yes. Proves that Cleo was a romantic, of course, because he claims that if the guard had soiled her in any way, he would have peeled the guard's flesh if had he touched and crushed the petal of his wild flower.
I love it when a man says that to another man about me. I say, sorry. I'm just having a little moment there. but you know, thankfully, Carrie is saved from a fate worse than death.
Yes.
She gets saved twice from a fate worse than death, interestingly, in the matter of like a few seconds. Lucky girl.
Yep. We see Dan and Malachi that are trying to trade or buy some horses so they can travel. Dan trades his tools, which, you know, hey, have you any idea how much those things cost? That's my livelihood.
Yet again, yes. Expensive stuff getting taken away from him.
Yes, and even in 1983, though, a screwdriver and a pair of pliers, I'm saying, you know, what's that going to set you back? You know,
maybe they are high quality. I mean, Craftsman tools are, you know.
That's true. I guess the Craftsman warranty doesn't count if you can't actually bring the tool back to Sears.
That's probably true. but I, you know, so Malachi says, yes, he'll give you all the stuff for horses. And lo and behold, the Green Man is there.
Yes, and he is being treated to all the drink he wants because everyone wants to know how he can call the wild horses.
Yeah.
Apparently, Green Men have special gifts and can communicate with anybody, anything,
any
animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and any person or animal, we come to find out, I guess.
Yeah. Green Man passes out while Dan's trying to get him to help him again. The rest of the crowd do not like Dan for interrupting them. And another little cartoonish fight precedes.
And this is the first actual time that we get to see Dan in action. We've seen him. We haven't really seen him fight anybody up until this point, have we? We've seen him.
Nope, this is the big fight scene for him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the first one. And if I had realized when I was first watching this that it was that Dan was also in Battlestar Galactica, I would have been much more excited about this scene. As it was, I was a little bit wondering why he was, you know, fighting these other people. But, you know, now that I know, I'll be watching this again tonight. This scene especially. But yeah,
that scene. Yeah. Just put it on replay.
Yeah, he takes on eight different thief guys or trader guys.
And if I'm not mistaken, we find out that he has absolutely no qualms with taking a life. I think he gets a hold of a sword and is fine with diving it in and slashing it around.
Does he? I missed that. It must be that kendo training, man, that they get violent.
Yep, exactly. maybe he doesn't actually kill anyone at this point. I thought he...
He might. I'm a girl. Muscles bulging. No, not really. No, I'm more like, wait, why are they fighting? Guys are so weird. And then, you know, somebody dies and I'm like, I don't even get what just happened. But no, we do actually get to see Dan in action at this point.
Yes. But he escapes. He's reunited. He takes Green Man with him. And he goes off. Meanwhile, Cleal and Carrie arrive at what I kind of thought is probably one of the crappiest warlord camps I've ever seen. Just sort of an adobe square building.
He has a wall.
He has a wall. He does have a wall.
A wall and a giant... He has a giant gate that apparently takes 6 to 8 men to lift.
Yes, it's a very heavy gate. But his actual fortress... I guess it is a fortress. It looks like it's heavy and thick. So I guess that's the point, but it's not very fancy. It's very just kind of boxes. Nothing too fancy.
Yeah.
Not what I was expecting for this great, powerful warlord. You expect the castle or the big something.
Well, it's
not just
Red Sonja. I mean, they don't have the budget of Red Sonja.
So that's true.
I mean, while you're a little disappointed, you do have to point out there are no other structures on this planet, apparently.
Apparently. I mean, and this was probably just some farmer's house in South Africa.
Yeah. With a gate around it, apparently.
Well, the gate maybe they built.
What? They don't have those in South Africa? I don't want to go anymore.
I did enjoy that Cleo was checking along. Apparently, there's a couple guys that betrayed him in some manner or another. And he shows us that he's a big fan of the three strikes and you're out rule.
Mm-hmm. One of those is Bill Flynn. Sorry, Flynn.
Yes, is he the one that gets the chance?
I think he actually gets hung, but I could be mistaken.
Oh, okay. Yes, he gives the one of the guys a chance. He's like, you want to kill me? And he gives him three spears, and he stands there and says, here's your chance. The guy throws the three spears, misses each time, and so Khalil shoots him and then hangs his friend. You don't see the hanging, but you hear it.
I think the friend is hung before then. I think when he captures Carrie is when they hang the friend.
Oh, okay.
But interesting to point out at this junction that Khalil seems to be the only person that has guns.
Yes. That is apparently his power. Rules with.
Yeah. But I think they do mention at some point before this that he does have a wizard working for him.
Yes, he's got a sorcerer.
A sorcerer, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. While all this is going on, Dan, the Green Man, and Malachi are captured again.
Again.
And now they have to fight the Guardian of the Rock. Well, everyone's had their has been captured or shot or taken or fought at least once at this point. So.
I was watching this thinking, well, that reminds me a lot of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. But Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom came out this year or the next year, didn't it?
I don't have the date.
The rock that they all worship. I thought, well, that's just a pure ripoff. But actually, this may have been out first.
Yeah, that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah, anyway, that was what it reminded me of. Was this? Except for this rock has magical powers, apparently.
It's apparently really hot.
And makes you explode. Spontaneous combustion rock. That's what we're going to call it.
So Dan has to fight the Champion of the Rock, which was this great, this really big guy. He actually looked really cool. I liked this guy.
Again, a little reminiscent of some Indiana Jones stuff going on there.
Yeah. He comes out, he's all painted, but big bald guy, kind of painted silver, was he? Or?
Yeah, he was like a sparkly kind of silver gold. Not sparkly, maybe. I just thought of him as being sparkly, but yeah.
But he does the fun thing where he just stands there while Dan wails away, kicks, punches, hits. Nothing seems to affect the guy. The guy actually looks like he's kind of enjoying it. You kept waiting for the guy to break out in the laughter. You can tell he's kind of holding it back.
It never happens.
Dan even tries kicking the guy in the groinal region to no effect.
Is that a word?
Except you hear a cowbell.
Again, those sound effects. I will say I've never attacked a man in that way, but if I ever do, I'll be interested to know if the cowbell sounds.
Only in his head.
Apparently. But yeah, even that doesn't affect him.
No. Dan then makes it. The guy finally has had enough. He goes to lunge at Dan. Dan jumps out of the way, finds this guy's only weakness, his big toe. Steps on his toe.
They should have called him Achilles, except it's on the wrong end of the foot.
Yeah. Which then the guy,
kicks,
of course...
And then kicks him in the backside.
Yes, the guy goes, finally, shows some pain, grabs his foot. Dan kicks him in the backside, throws him into the rock.
Which it makes him spontaneously combust.
Can spontaneously explode.
Yeah.
The worshippers of the rock don't honor their agreement, however.
Oh, yeah, they were going to release him. I forgot about that.
They were
going to
release him.
Go.
Yeah, that doesn't work out for him. About this time, we find out that Cleo's sorcerer is indeed the professor. Again, been here for apparently a year, still sporting his lab coat and slacks.
In very good condition. They probably have dry cleaning there.
Yeah, still white lab coat. Not stained, not
true.
Tattered.
Welcome to Vanna.
Mm-hmm. Cleo again proves himself the gentleman by not taking Carrie like he could at any time.
That's
he wants to wait until she gives herself to him freely.
Or begs him on her hands and knees.
Yes, by locking her in a cage. You'll beg me.
You'll beg me.
Oh, I remember being single.
I know what it's like. I don't have to remember. What am I talking about? I will say the begging thing, though, doesn't work. But she, you know, Carrie's a tough little cookie.
She is.
You know what we didn't even talk about yet is Shireen. I like Shireen.
All right. Cleo's current girlfriend du jour.
Or slave girl, as she's, you know, pronounced in the film.
Does not like Carrie at all.
For obvious reasons.
Yes.
No slave girl likes to have her, you know, status taken away from her.
Right. I imagine she does enjoy some perks.
Not going to comment. Yeah. no, but she's, I thought actually, you know, now take this with a grain of salt. I thought she was prettier than Carrie. So I kind of don't really get, I think maybe Cleo is just, you know, hypnotized by the blonde hair and all of that. But I actually really like Shireen. I thought she was pretty spunky.
I think it's a matter of perspective. You know, she kind of had that exotic look. She's wearing the leather. She's got the dark hair, the darker skin.
Yeah, she has much more skin than Carrie does. Not excessive skin. She has full clothing on the whole time. But
yes, nothing more you wouldn't see in a bathing suit.
The drift showing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yet Carrie is, you know, dressed head to toe, the blonde hair. So by Cleo's point of view, obviously that would be more attractive. He sees stuff like Cherie just walking around everywhere.
Well, I mean, yeah, when you've got a whole harem full of swimsuit Latin babes, I guess the blonde with clothes on is exotic.
Exactly. All a matter of perspective. Dan and the gang finally escape and set off to rescue Carrie. So you got to know that they're fine. Don't worry. In case you're concerned.
Thanks. I was worried.
Professor,
at this point, by the way we should mention the man beast showed up to help them. They were caught, you know, so the other group doesn't honor their word. They lock him up in a cage. You know, Dan, using his incredible intellect, gets them free of the cage, and they have another big fight scene. Probably I would say the biggest fight scene in the whole film.
Yes, including Man-Beast with his giant club whopping around people.
And he shows up, and saves them. And luckily the Green Man can speak to him and finds out that he's Carrie's friend, too, because she saved him.
Right.
And so now we've got a group of four. It's very Silverado.
Yeah, I did like there was a line, something like, you know, he'd like to go with us. And Dan's, I think it's Dan that says, I wouldn't go without him.
Wouldn't go without him. That's what he says. But off they go. They head off to save Carrie.
Yes. Then the professor visits Carrie in her cage and gives her a huge info dump about what has happened. He gets transported to the Lost Universe. Cleo finds him. He's ready to kill him, but then using some little scientific trickery, you know, convinces Cleo that he's some sort of sorcerer. Then, of course, invents gunpowder and rolled iron and flintlocks and
everything that a man could possibly need.
He's a scientist of many talents. You'd think someone that could make an interdimensional portal wouldn't have the skills to make flintlocks, but
I felt, you know, it's what's interesting is through this whole movie, the first time I was watching it, I kept feeling like I was watching a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. Because it has that kind of feeling of, you know, getting thrown back to that really archaic area, that really archaic period of time, but having all that knowledge. Anyway, I felt like it was very similar without stealing the actual storyline.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I'm not going to say that. Okay.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. So,
you're,
but he.
You're right.
Thank you. Thanks. But yeah, so he's able to make guns for Cleo, and that's why he's alive, apparently.
Yes, and now he's going to create nitroglycerin for him to increase his power, and he'll rule the land, and I guess he feels that if Cleo's in charge everywhere, he'll be perfectly safe. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure of the professor's motivation. I think
We got that moment at the very beginning when he and Carrie meet, and he gets a little... angsty about, oh, the other scientists don't believe that I can do this, and he gets kind of dramatic, and then he calms down and says, oh, I'm so sorry. I get a little bit upset sometimes.
There you go.
So we get that little foreshadowing of him being maybe a little bit evil.
He feels appreciated now, and people recognize him for his intelligence and skills.
And he gets chicks.
And he gets chicks, that's right. Oh, that's right. He gets his own little harem.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. Oh, Dan and the gang stumble across, what was her name? Cherie?
Shireen, yeah, with the N.
Yeah, who's been left out to dry.
Because she attacks Carrie in a fit of jealousy.
Yes.
I can understand that. I've had a fit of jealousy once.
Oh, absolutely.
but they hang her out to dry in irons and tell the head.
Guard,
Vosk tells her, you're the only one that's going to know why the bodies of our slaves are never here in the morning. Because she's left alive instead of just killed and thrown out.
Right. So Dan and company find her and release her just in time to get the answer to that question. The horde of some sort of flesh eaters.
Evil creatures.
Evil creatures who chase them through a cave. Dan and the gang find a cave and they go in and the flesh eaters chase after them.
It's very Beastmaster. I kept waiting for one of them to catch him and like wrap him in his cloak and then just like digest him whole right there. Doesn't happen.
It probably couldn't happen because their blue jeans would get in the way.
I heard about that. Apparently, there's a part where you can see the blue jeans under the.
There's
the
actual several scenes as they're running through the cave. It's kind of like, yep, there's pants.
maybe I just get too absorbed in the movies. But yeah, I didn't.
I read that little bit of trivia before I saw the movie, so I was kind of watching for it.
I wasn't looking for anything. I didn't read anything about it ahead of time. I'm notorious for not wanting to know anything about a movie before I watch it.
Oh, okay. Well, you're better than I am when it comes to films like this. I kind of like to... if it's anything I'm going to find interesting, I like to see if I can spot it myself.
I like to be surprised, and then if I notice it, then you know that it's legitimately noticeable.
All right. Good point. fortunately, this cave, after they... they don't fight off the flesh eaters. They barely escape. They're able to push a giant rock out of the way, thanks to Man Beast, and they're able to escape. And this cave, fortunately, leads right outside of Cleo's fortress.
That's where caves lead.
Yes,
like
very
Rome.
Convenient.
Yeah.
Yes. But then they are captured again.
They break in first.
That's true. Yes, I think it's Man Beast opens the gate for him, doesn't he?
Yep, and they crawl under, and they get to... they go to save Carrie is what happens. They get down into the prison, all led by Shireen. Shireen is taking them wherever they need to go because she doesn't like Carrie, so she wants her out of there. And they find Carrie, and she's once again being accosted by the head guard.
Right, because no one can hear her down there. Nobody!
It's like space. Yeah. Dan comes to save the day, and this is the moment where he actually says, she says, I thought you were dead. And he says, I thought you were going to suffer a fate worse than death. I thought, wow, that's dialogue right there. It was special. It's a moment.
maybe he read the wrong part of the script. It probably said, Dan rescues her from fate worse than death.
He
missed the line. I rescued you from a fate.
Then they say, Carrie's the one that tells them, hey, the doctor is the same, the sorcerer is the same Dr. Hartman, so we should go get him.
Right, because he can get us home. He's the only one that can get us home, right? So they have they got to get the doctor. But yes, they are captured. Carrie offers her cooperation, quote unquote, to save their lives. So they all end up in jail.
A scene which we don't actually get to see. You never,
know how far her cooperation has gone.
Well, more to the point, I mean, you see the whole part where they get, captured again, and I'm a little heartbroken. Shireen kicks it. Cleal's not a nice guy, but what is it? The justice of Cleal is harsh. Is that hard? Is that what it is?
Yes, harsh but fair.
Harsh but fair.
Or fair but harsh, or some little twist
harsh
on that.
But fair. Yeah, and but we lose Shireen at this point, and everybody gets captured when Carrie, apparently, though we don't see it, so we're
no,
left
no. Next thing
wonder.
You know, Carrie's in a nice gown, and our friends are in jail.
Yeah,
and we only find out about that again through a little bit of exposition with a conversation between Cleo and Carrie, I think.
And it may be actually Carrie and the doctor when she says, you know, you're going to help me or else I'm going to tell them what you are.
Right. Which I'm not even sure what that would really do. Oh, he's not a sorcerer. He's a scientist. And we're like, can he still make me gunpowder and nitroglycerin?
Right.
Yes. I don't care.
Okay, yeah, I don't really care about that then. You go back to the bedroom. Yeah.
Yes.
but
little bit of a plot flaw there, but
But she does apparently talk Dr. Hartman into helping her help them escape.
Yes. They all escape, they get the key, everyone gets out, they find a lot of the nitro and gunpowder and start lining bombs all over the fortress
everywhere.
Yes, and they to set the whole thing off, they use the fantastic fuse. I love it when they do this, where Dan just sprinkles the it's the Wile E. Coyote method of fuses.
With the
just
gunpowder, just
dribbles the gunpowder line down the stairs.
I really want to know if that works. I'm really curious to know. I mean, it must to some extent, because very clearly in that special effect, it is following the trail of the gunpowder.
That is true. But I'm just thinking that at any point, just someone could get up, oh, I got to go use the bathroom, you know, walk through the hallway and kick it. Oh, plot's foiled.
People don't have to use the bathroom on that planet.
That, you know, and honestly, they probably just have the buckets in the room.
So. Honestly, I mean, yeah, it is a little primitive.
Dan rescues Carrie from Cleo, apparently. And finally...
No, I have to say, though, I got to break in here. This is the part that actually made me like Carrie. Through this whole movie, she's been being saved. She's been being kidnapped. She's been being almost suffering a fate worse than death. And she gets a moment here where, you know, you see her backing down. The bad guy's got her. He knows he's got her. And she wallops him. She's got that unexpected little moment where she gets to be the heroine. And I gave a little cheer for Carrie right at that moment.
Yeah, it was good for her. And, you know, again, cowbells ring. that's her. that's the move to try to get out of any tight situation.
No. She walks him with the gift that he gives her. She socks him one.
Oh, that's right. Like, she had the gold. Yeah. Oh, I forgot. My
she
mistake.
Actually, no, it's I had to watch it twice. Well, no, I would have remembered anyway. But, no, she walks him, and I thought, good on you, Carrie.
That's right, because then they do that great little bit. It's one of those subtle things where, you know, she whops him and knocks him out, and then she does that. She opens her palm and kind of does that toss, and you see that gold piece or whatever that she just
Because they actually played it off. I thought that I honestly gotta say that was one of the most realistic moments in the movie. Because any girl that's gonna punch a guy is not gonna knock him out in a single blow, but she's got that backup right there, so it actually works.
Yeah,
you believe it.
But to make a long story short here, let's see. Cleo is finally killed in a giant explosion. The whole group escapes, and the fortress is destroyed.
In one of the most fantastic special effects events of the entire movie, actually, probably the most. You can see where they put their money in this one.
The pyrotechnics were impressive.
They really, and I mean, there's a moment where it. I mean, I'm not exaggerating, but I'm a little more enthusiastic about this than it probably warrants. But there is a moment where the fire kind of sweeps across the screen, and I was pretty impressed. I thought that looks pretty real.
Yeah, that was kind of like the, you know what, the camera probably didn't survive. Thank God the film did. Yeah,
thank God the film did. But no, it's you don't question. You know, now they have a tendency to want to make the bad guy. You have to see him die to believe he's gone.
Right.
You know, then they didn't suffer from that. They didn't suffer from that need. So, you know, it's okay for him to just blow up with the rest of the building.
Right.
But, again, a very impressive blow up.
Yes. Dan, Carrie, and Malachi, Dr. Hartman, go off back into the wilderness. Malachi happens, they actually stumble across. Malachi finds Carrie's mirror just lying there out of nowhere.
Just, yeah.
And that's, as it turns out, of course, the professor was just saying that how there's no way they can find that exact spot where the
one in a million chance.
One in a million chance.
Impossible.
And then Malachi looks over his shoulder, sees something sparkly. Oh, look, there's the mirror. Oh, I just found it right there. The fact that he went over and picked it up, nothing happens to him.
Yeah.
Carrie and Dan, of course.
He leaned in.
Oh, okay.
What it was. And, you know, hey, and it had to have been that exact moment, just like that, like Carrie says.
Right. So Carrie and Dan rush, step into that area, wait a few seconds, and then, of course, the beam appears. They disappear.
And the doctor says, no, wait, but they're gone.
They're gone. Yes, I do like the fact that they spent all that time getting, you know, spent all that trouble rescuing the doctor, the professor, the only one that can save him. And then they have absolutely no problem leaving him behind in a world where they've already been proven they can't really trust this guy. So I'm guessing if there were a sequel, we would have found Emperor Malachi and his sorcerer, Dr. Hartman.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm thinking that Dr. Hartman would have become... I could see him as the next really bad Cleel, except that he doesn't really have the muscle, I guess.
His justice isn't hard but fair, or whatever.
Right, it's that harsh. His justice is just fair. Yeah.
But that is the end of the film.
Yeah, the end. And an abrupt ending, but it's funny because, I mean, as fast as this film moves, as quickly as it moves you through each of the different events, because there is a lot that happens in this movie, you know, you get to the end and you kind of don't feel like it needs to drag on anymore. You're kind of like, yeah, that's about where it should go.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's kind of like, okay, let's get out. And, oh, they went through. You kind of knew it was either going to end in two different ways. They were either going to make it back home or they were just going to go and strike a life together on Vanya.
Either way, you know that the two men, you know, Dan and Carrie, end up together.
Exactly.
And we know that because they had that witty repertoire.
Exactly. So, yeah, this film was filmed in South Africa. It was filmed for a United States made-for-cable type movie. It did get a theatrical release overseas. No word on exactly how well that did, but it's any
wonder. It was the 80s. Yeah.
It was the 80s. Is it any wonder the rest of the world hates us? No.
Well, we were talking at one point, and I said I think my favorite character was actually Shireen. But Shireen and Cleel, I think both of them I really enjoyed. It, as much as this is really in the vein of the Beastmaster and Red Sonja we mentioned and all of that, it's just entertaining.
It is.
But you have a solid bad guy in it. They don't really make a farce out of him. They don't make him super shallow. You kind of get this impression that this is a guy that wants to hold on to his power, but he's not just ridiculously over the top.
Right.
I think John Saxon is fantastic in this. I would definitely vote for him. I couldn't resist. I would vote for him for a bad guy in just about anything. I think he's really good in this. You know, and I know Shireen is really, technically she's a bit part, but she, you know, she does a little bit to add some depth to the movie where, you know, if Carrie had been the only speaking female part in the whole movie, it would have been a little, again, you know, one woman with how many men, 20, 50 men, something
right.
like that. But, you know, you have Shireen, which, again, she adds another facet to Cleel's character. She adds a little bit of tension. She helps out definitely with some of the resolution. But I like their characters. I thought they were a good time just to hang out with.
Yeah, absolutely. I found it kind of interesting. I mean, we're looking back on it, and we look back on Richard Hatch, and know he's in Battlestar Galactica. He was in the Battlestar Galactica reboot. So we know Richard Hatch is this character. He's like this this entity that is Richard Hatch kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But back when this film was made, outside of Battlestar Galactica, he was not, like, the big well-known actor. I mean, honestly, John Saxon and Kay Lenz probably had more experience under their belts at that point than he did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's really, really more of the minor, the less experienced actor in the whole out of the whole bunch, which I think is kind of interesting.
It is interesting. It's interesting. I mean, if you read quotes from him, he says, you know, he never thought about being an actor. He's a really shy, quiet guy. And you kind of get that impression from the character as well. But
right.
he pulls it off well. Even though he's obviously expected to be this kind of action hero, he manages it. He aside from the slightly bad fight effects and all of that, you know, you're never looking at him going, I mean, he's a tall guy. They managed to make him bigger than most of the other people in the cast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's just kind of one of those guys you really take for granted that he's just going to do what he has to do no matter what situation he's in. And he's, you know, if I can use the word, he's believable in it.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect. And that's what's kind of fun about this movie is, even though the situations are absolutely ridiculous, and there are a few instances, like we mentioned Carrie's first appearance in the Lost Universe, mm-hmm. and how she just pretty much goes, oh no, and then off she went.
Yeah.
There is a lot of realism to, I mean, if these characters were real, this is how you would expect them to act.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, honestly, if you're a scientist, you suddenly find yourself in medieval, you're going to do exactly what this doctor did.
Yeah, you're going to try and make yourself as powerful as you can, or at least, indispensable to the most powerful person around.
Right. Cleal is a warlord. I mean, he sees an opportunity to have power and expand his power. Mm-hmm. And he's going to use the scientist,
Well, I think a wise person once said, "One word gets out that a warlord's gone soft, and it's nothing but work, work, work all the time."
Yeah.
but you can see he's not a flat character. He's not two-dimensional at all. You can see that he's got these desires and this passion. And, while he's, yes, being evil and cruel, he's doing it to maintain his power. He's not just, one-dimensional, I think is what I wanted to say, not two-dimensional.
Yeah. And Dan is a survivor. I mean, you can see it. He's an action man. He's obviously had some experience. You can see this guy is someone that he goes camping. He's into the kendo.
He wears flannel.
He wears flannel. Obviously, he's an outdoorsy fellow, And even outside of, like I said, Carrie's first appearance, from that point on, maybe she might be the weakest character. And I think you even kind of touched on that. If she had been the only female character, I think the film would suffer.
You do have that. I agree. I absolutely agree with that. But I think that they tried to make her, I think they didn't want to make her just pathetically helpless. So, I mean, you open with the scene where she's, charming a snake, basically.
Right.
So I think they were trying hard to say, this is a girl that she's got some guts. She may not be the toughest person in the world, physically. But I think they do try and make her, they try to keep her from just being the dumb blonde.
Yeah. Oh. So all in all, this is a film, like I said, that was literally orphaned. The studios just apparently either forgot about it or just said it isn't worth it. But what do you think? Is this a film? Is it worth the trouble to track it down online and watch?
I think that's a trick question. I think it's a trick question, and a lot of the reason is because I really enjoy campy films. I love B movies. I love especially bad creature films. I just have such a good time with them. So to ask me, do you think this is a movie worth watching? Well, I've already disclosed to the listening audience that I've watched it more than once. only twice, but it's something that, you have your favorite movies that you watch or the movies that are just comfortable to watch. And this is one that, when you're home on a rainy day feeling sick or whatever, it's something you can put on that's not a lot of stress. It's got its, it's witty little moments. And it's overall, I think it's pretty enjoyable. It's not something that I would recommend for everybody out there. But for somebody that enjoys some of that kind of old-fashioned campy kind of stuff and can swallow their disbelief for long enough to sit through a movie about, a TV star and an electrician that gets sent to another universe in the 1980s. I would say, yeah, I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. I feel very much the same way. I'm also a fan of, the creature flicks and the B movies and the camp. So it really doesn't, I find it really enjoyable. And you're right. This film is just, it's easy to watch. This is what's really nice. I mean, there are some B movies, some camp films that are just so bad, you have to force your way through.
Yeah.
This movie isn't like that. It's an easy watch. You can sit down, you can watch it. It all flows and you don't mind it. You enjoy it. You have a good time. It's all, if you want to sit there and pick out the flaws, you can.
You definitely can. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but if you don't, if you just want to like let it wash over you, I mean, I don't think you'd sit there and go, God, I can't believe I watched that. Mm-mm. Unless
there are definitely worse movies out there.
Oh, there are a lot worse movies. I mean, compared to like some of the sci-fi originals, I'd rate this better than a lot of the sci-fi originals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you have it. That's kind of our thoughts on Prisoners of the Lost Universe. Only thing we didn't really go on is, like, not really a lost universe. It's lost prisoners in another universe, maybe.
Yeah. But they had to title it something, I guess.
Yeah, they had the catchy title. It's everything. But yeah, a lot of fun. And honestly, if you kind of like a little bit of camp, but the good kind of camp, I'd say hunt it down. Like I said, it's easy to find and easy to watch.
It is. And, you know, there are enough characters in this that if you've seen anything that they've ever been in, there are enough people that have really been well known that if you've seen something that they've been in, Hawk the Slayer, I think half the cast was in, which was written by the same guy, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch this and then you just pick a character and then go find another movie to watch based on it, I think you'll probably have a fun time at least knowing what other kind of stuff they've been in.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Lydia, I want to thank you very much for joining me for this, the premiere episode of Orphaned Entertainment.
Well, thank you.
I think we picked a great film to start with.
Yeah, I agree. I think we were down to this and one other, and I'm glad we picked this one. It was a good one.
I agree too. Oh, I guess I should mention, if you really want to, if you want to watch this and you want a little bit of help dealing with the camp, the Rift Tracks team did indeed do an audio track for this film.
And I saw that today. I didn't even know that until just now, like a few hours ago.
Yeah, just recently. It was just May of this year, so it was fairly recent. So if you want a little help, easier for you to stomach, to digest, yeah, this one, that might be your route. But I would try to watch it without it.
Yeah, I think it's enjoyable enough without it. I mean, it has its moments where it's just a little bit goofy. It's just a little silly. And it takes you don't feel like it's taking itself so seriously that you feel disgusted by it.
No, I don't think anyone was in here thinking that they were doing Shakespeare or was going to get the Academy Award.
No.
Everyone in it was having fun, and it shows, and the film was fun.
It really was.
So I guess that's it. We will say goodbye. This is our first episode. So I don't know if it's too early to start asking for any kind of feedback or anything. But if you feel so inclined, you can send us an email. And that is at orphaned, E-N-T, at jonja.net, J-O-N-J-A.net. I'll put all the good links. I'll put the links to the film. And I'll even go ahead and put the links to the Rift Tracks in the show notes. But I guess that'll do it for us. So again, Lydia, thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I actually had a really good time. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Excellent. Okay, everybody. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.